Hello, and welcome to the Business of Data podcast brought to you by Corinium Global Intelligence. In this podcast, we talk to senior executives, thought leaders, and experts from a range of industries and departments within large and small organizations across the globe. They share stories and experiences that shape their passion for data and analytics and form the future of our industry. Welcome to the podcast, Sergio. I've been really looking forward to talking. How are you?
Thank you very much, Krista, and thanks for having me here. Likewise, I've been really looking forward for this moment.
Excellent, excellent. So as some background for our listeners before we jump right in, can you tell us a little bit about you personally and what your role is at Moody's Analytics?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Sergio. I have been a chief technical officer in small startups and big ones and corporates for a bit more than two decades. And I joined Moody's Analytics about 3 years ago after selling them my company in artificial intelligence. But then at that moment, I decided that my future was going to be in the world of quantum computing. So after integrating the company and joining the team, I managed to convince Moody's, all the executives, that quantum computing was not an option, but a mandatory investment for any company in the financial industry. And ever since, we have created a team that's comprised of researchers and quantum computing specialists, but also ones in the finance industry, understand the domain, in order to research and apply the benefits of quantum computing in the financial industry.
Oh, well, it's so exciting to talk to you about this topic in particular. Obviously, quantum is something that's really on everyone's mind, and it sounds like you were at the forefront of this personally, and now joining you, with your full team on the topic at Moody's Analytics. So we've all just partnered with you on the Moody's Analytics team on a report focused on quantum computing in the financial services industry, specifically, really looking to gauge the current impact of quantum and how it may progress from here. Now, before we get into those five findings, which are really fascinating, can you take a step back with us and share why you and your team at Moody's had such an interest in quantum in its current and future state in general?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a topic that I'm very passionate about. So if I go over 3 hours talking, just stop me.
We'll set up the next podcast and we'll just do another one after this.
Exactly. So look at quantum computing in a similar fashion than cloud computing is also to artificial intelligence is. Contrary to some other technological developments, this is not looking for a problem. This is a solution for a certain type of problems, computational problems, that the industry, the world, has today. And what do I mean by this? We humans have specific problems or challenges that are very difficult to solve by normal computers. One of them is generating encryption mechanisms or decrypting passwords, right? That is a complex problem that we have created ourselves to be difficult. So no one, decrypts our passwords. But there are other more mundane cases, like how do we optimize a portfolio? How do we optimize a route? How do we model a molecule? All those problems are not feasible for your typical computer. And typically, we use HPC, high-performance computers, or just what we call commonly supercomputers. But that is still not enough. So there are some types of problems in the world, and finance has a lot of them, where not even with the smartest of the algorithms, not even with all the cloud computing that we have, putting every single chip that we have in the universe to work at the same time, we would be able to get an answer relatively quickly. Let me give you one example. Just to simulate a very simple molecule like the caffeine would take many, many years, millions of years to simulate it exactly as it is. So the only thing that we have as humans is, create simple models that are good enough for what we do. And specifically in the financial industry, we're trying to model risk, model portfolios, returns, model option pricing, and some of these things that many banks do on a daily basis. The only option we have is to create toy models to simulate those problems. So those are the challenges. Now, about a few decades ago, there was this guy, Richard Feynman, who thought, well, if nature is quantum mechanical, it follows the rules of quantum mechanics, then in order to simulate it, we're going to need some sort of quantum mechanical computer. And then that kickstarted everything that we had until now, with a lot of researchers, a lot of physicists, creating a whole theory about how do we create quantum computations in these type of devices. At the moment, and this is the part that I like the most, today we have quantum computers out there. You can touch them, you can see them, you can execute algorithms, you can execute code on those computers. Typically, you access them through the cloud, and there are a bunch of providers out there like IBM or Amazon, and then other companies like Rigetti or D-Wave who provide access to those quantum computers. And all those problems that I mentioned at the beginning are perfect for these type of computers. Therefore, our dream is that by continuously evolving these devices, both on the hardware and on the software side, we're going to be able to solve problems exponentially faster in a way that we would have never imagined as humans.
It's just fascinating, and the developments are moving so quickly. It seems like as we started this project, you know, even what changed from the onset of our initial briefing working together, just the pace went so quickly. I was privileged to work with your team when we started this research project, and I know you know, your team, you personally, and our group here had some very specific qualifications we wanted to head into this research looking at, and we wanted to make sure we got a really broad glimpse of the market. Can you talk about why this report is so unique compared to others out there that might be similar?
Yeah. So you mentioned one thing that I think is incredibly relevant, and probably the main reason why I jumped into this field. Every single week, we see some kind of breakthrough that is increasing the speed of this market exponentially. Either some improvement on the hardware, on the physics underneath that, or on algorithms, or on the way that we deploy that in the industry. So it is an incredibly exciting moment to be in this. We are basically creating this industry almost as if we were in the 60s, in the late 60s, in the age of computing, when people back then was creating we have today, and the main reason why today we have laptops and the smartphones and all those things. So it is an industry in its early stages, doing our first baby steps in a way, but at the same time creating it in the way that we believe it will have the most benefit for the industry. So in order to do this, we believe it is extremely important to have a very deep partnership between the companies, the fully fledged quantum companies, quantum consultants and hardware companies, the research community, all these academics, professors and researchers and PhDs working on the field, and the industry. But this kind of triangle needs to work together like no one has seen ever before. And that is what we try to do from our team, leverage those three things in a way that it is not just a research project that at some point in the future with some sort of technical transfer, it will see the light of day. Now, what we have seen over the years is that the industry tends to be very skewed towards the algorithm side or the research side. But when we talk about the specific cases for the industry, and specifically in our case for the financial industry, there's a little bit of hype around the concept. And it makes sense because, you know, every company wants to make a penny with this. But we've seen a lot of research or reports even, or surveys, who say the quantum computing adoption is huge. Everyone is trying to play or to jump on this wave. And we think that is not completely accurate. We think that some of those surveys are biased, mm-hmm. and we wanted to touch on one of the main assets that Moody's has. That is basically we work with virtually every financial institution in the world, and we are a trusted provider on credit information and ratings and decision making tools and data. So we have been able to go there and say, hey, who's really working in quantum? And if you're not, why not? Is it because you don't believe in it? Is it because you don't have the information? And what would make you change your mind about it?
That sounds great. And do you want to give us a teaser? I know certainly the report, which all of our listeners will be able to download and read immediately following this. But what were some of the key takeaways that you found and that you were surprised or not surprised to read from this one?
I think I was both surprised and not at the same time. That is very quantum, right? I mean, in this superposition of estates. In a way, the industry is living a very interesting moment, because today quantum computers are still not powerful enough to solve real life problems. Even though maybe some companies claim that is possible, but we believe that is not true. We are in the very, very early stages of the industry, and this concept of quantum advantage or quantum improvement or quantum business advantage will come in years. Some people think that it's going to be 3-4 years. Some people think about 5 years. Some other people think about 10 years. It's going to come. And that is why we're working on this and why we're investing in this technology. But like what happened with the artificial intelligence field in what's called the AI winter a couple of decades ago, we have to be extremely careful with the expectations that we create. So that was one of the reasons for creating this report. And in that sense, we believe that there is still a lot of work to do on creating awareness in the financial industry. What I mean by this, what I mean is that in order to get the advantages of quantum computing, whenever that advantage comes, let's say 5 years or 7 years from now, you have to start it now. Because be honest, it's not a simple thing, right? You need to get some education on that, and it's a little bit mind-blowing what you have to study. So you need to start now and to start educating your top executives, educating your managers, educating your quants, your software engineers, your data scientists, pretty much everyone in your organization. So with this in mind, we launched this report. And one of the things that we found that goes against some of the facts that other reports claimed was that about 73% of the respondents, and we're talking about people in the finance industry exclusively, who were aware of what quantum is, or at least to some degree, they have not identified any bottleneck in their current models or simulations. That doesn't mean that those bottlenecks don't exist. It means that they maybe don't see a reason to get there. So let me give you one example. One of the canonical cases that a lot of people use in quantum is portfolio optimization, asset picking. Let's say you have $100 million and you want to distribute them among all the public companies that are publicly traded in the different stock markets. So you can have all these combinations and say, well, I'm going to pick these companies in the NASDAQ index and these other ones in the LSE and so on and so forth. There are millions, billions of combinations if you take only the stock markets in Europe, the UK, and the United States. So finding the right one, the one that provides the best return, is a very difficult problem. And of course, banks tackle this problem not only with public companies, but with any type of security in reality. At the end of the day, most financial institutions don't have this problem as one of their top challenges to solve today, because they have found today ways of solving them classically, even at the expense of accuracy. So they may run it once a quarter or once a month, and then for them, it's not a problem. So that was one of the findings. The other one was that it kind of goes against another claim that most companies in the Fortune 500 would be investing at least $1 million by 2023. What we found is that in reality, the vast majority of the companies don't have plans on investing at least in the short term. And they will basically see what happens, how this industry evolves, and maybe who goes first, then to reap the benefits as a follower, not necessarily as a leader.
Now I have a question on that. I want to build on that. Obviously, there's always risks in adopting new technologies, and certainly adopting, you know, being the first one in your industry to adopt new technologies. When it comes to quantum specifically, what an advantage would an early adopter have, and how would a follower, if you will, make up for that down the road? So, is there an advantage to adopting early in this case, or would you recommend that actually it's not something that you should jump quickly on?
We definitely recommend our clients and our partners to start investing in quantum. That is, at the end of the day, one of our mandates. But we have to carefully choose the reason for that. If you decide to invest in quantum because you think you're going to get a specific return on investment on what you do today, basically that you do something either better or in a more accurate way, then you're going to have a problem, because you will very quickly face the limitations of the quantum computers today. However, if you're investing in this because you want to create intellectual property, if you want to create patents, if you want to start training your team so that when the industry gets more mature, basically we get better quantum computers that are usable with real life problems, then that is the right way of doing that. So in Moody's, what we do is a threefold approach. It's not just, let's get this algorithm and try to implement it with a small data set or with a Mickey Mouse problem that resembles what we have in our production systems. What we do is, number one, our own research on what new algorithms, what novel algorithms can provide those benefits in time. Number two, we partner with academic institutions, with researchers, so there is support to the basic science that also then will get back to us in the shape of additional algorithms. And then we do training, a lot of training, both internally, our own teams of quants and mathematicians and statisticians, but also to our clients. In fact, one of the things that we did was we released an internal course on quantum computing for data scientists, software engineers, and quants. And a few of our clients said, hey, that's interesting. I would love to get access to that. So we are repackaging it so we can make it available for our clients as well externally. So I think those are the main reasons for this. If you go to your board of directors or to your executive committee saying, hey, I have this algorithm, or I'm going to partner with this company because we're going to do this exponentially faster, the first they're going to ask you is, what's going to be the return on investment? Mm-hmm. And you're not going to have any. So maybe you get along with that for a couple of years, but at some point that money is going to run dry. Therefore, we suggest caution on how you build your strategy on quantum. Yet at the same time, start now.
Fascinating advice. Thank you. Thank you so much. And you started to talk a little bit about the next generation of workers. I caught a theme of that, and upskilling your teams and training. A lot of our listeners are tasked with not only upskilling their current teams, but also preparing those teams and getting a plan together for teams that would have the capacity to work with future tools, of which quantum may be one, right? So if you look forward 10 years, quantum could be a technology, a tool that all data teams in financial services are using. How do current leaders prepare their teams now, and what should they be looking for in people that can work with this technology in the future? What are the skills necessary? What is the training required? Are people even prepared now?
I would say people are definitely not prepared, but that is natural for the type of field that it is. Today, the way we build quantum algorithms is very brick and mortar. Basically, we're creating circuits with quantum gates, which would be the equivalent of logic gates. Mm-hmm. It's almost like if you tell a software engineer, hey, to build your website, you have to go and put things on silicon and run your logical gates to put that website online, which of course doesn't make sense, right? We need to create many different layers of abstraction all the way to reach the level of maturity that we have today on classical standard computing. I like to use the symbol of cloud computing, right? So the cloud really disrupted our industry, and provided us with a way of scaling up our operations in a way that we could have not imagined. Right? Today, you can snap your fingers and get 2,000 servers working for you for training a machine learning algorithm in no time, have them running for 20 minutes, and then destroy those servers. And that, of course, in the age of the data centers, of the colos, that was definitely not possible, right? You had to buy the iron, you had to connect that, you had all this army of system engineers and system administrators, network administrators. It was definitely much more expensive. However, the cloud, and that's still a challenge for many companies, came gradually. Right. First, there were the first providers. At the beginning, it was not super resilient or super safe. So people started to put small workloads in there all the way to what we have today, which is a very safe, secure, full of use cases cloud that is most companies don't even think about a data center first strategy. With cloud computing, it's a little bit like that, with the exception of having exponentially more power. So mm-hmm. being exponentially more, having exponentially more capabilities of disrupting your industry. But the other thing is that in many cases, this advantage will be on a per-use case level from one day to another. And what I mean by this is that today you can see the roadmaps on the quantum hardware from most of the companies out there, from IBM, for example, that today has a 400 plus qubit device available that you can pay by the second, right, or by the minute. We know the roadmap from IBM or from Rigetti, from Amazon, on what they're going to put in the market. So the day they release a quantum computer big enough, and I mean big enough, with enough qubits that are error-free, or at least that have error-correcting capabilities, you're going to be able to run your algorithms immediately there and get a competitive advantage that your competitors have. So you won't have the same ability that we had with the cloud, where everyone slowly got into there and increased our budgets on our AWS or GCP or Azure cloud cost. No, it's going to be pretty much day and night, on a per use case basis.
Sergio, one thing we haven't talked about yet is the impact on cybersecurity. Can you share some thinking there?
Yeah, so it is the elephant in the room. And we've talked about some of the big problems that quantum computers can tackle. One of those big problems is a mathematical problem that we humans have created difficult on purpose for computers, which is creating a safe password for you. And by password, I mean any digital transaction. When you swipe your credit card in a restaurant or in an e-commerce website, that is at the end of the day an encryption mechanism that was made very difficult on purpose. So I cannot go with my laptop and decrypt your password and then get access to your credit card, which is something we're all grateful for. Well, lo and behold, quantum computers, we know they can decrypt that password. We have an algorithm, it's called Shor's algorithm, that can find that can decrypt our asymmetric encryption mechanisms with an exponential speedup, which is, of course, a problem for the cybersecurity world. And one of the reasons why many, many financial institutions and definitely the governments are investing heavily in quantum computers. We are safe for now in the sense that we don't have a quantum computer big enough that can run this algorithm at scale and decrypt your password. But we believe that it's a matter of time, and the community thinks that it will be somewhere between 2030 and 2035. And that will be the moment when we will need to change absolutely everything in our encryption mechanisms, almost like if it was a year 2000, if any of you remembers that.
Yeah.
So we're calling that the year to quantum, kind of a remember moment, but a little bit more dangerous. So one key important concern about quantum computers.
Well, luckily we have such advanced warning of that, and I'm sure there's many bright minds working on that as we speak. So we're certainly not caught off guard and are prepared as possible for what that might
be. That is right. Yeah, that is correct.
Wow, what a leap. What a leap from where we are now. And on that theme, I want to ask you to look in your crystal ball, if you will, and you know, picture us 10 years from now. The report really shows some findings that quantum is going to be transformative for the financial services industry specifically. Looking into that crystal ball, what changes do you see for the financial services industry in 10 years because of quantum?
Well, many, because what we're seeing today, what we're doing today is trying to solve the same problems that we have today with quantum computers in the same way. But we haven't even started to dream about the new things that we could create. Let me put you one example. When Bank of America, the very first bank that put a computer that they co-developed with Stanford, they basically built that room-sized computer back in the 60s in order to have the very first ATM, right? To automate some of the teller tasks. It was a robot at the end of the day. But little they knew back then in the 60s that we have today app stores and the internet and a whole economy that has made the world turn upside down. So we're exactly in that moment, right? We know how we calculate risk in the financial industry. We're going to try to do it in the same way, with the same assumptions that we've had for decades. Now, the difference is once we have these devices, and 10 years is a pretty good time frame here, we're going to start dreaming on different ways of calculating this, different ways of finding solutions for our industry. So I see that in 10 years, definitely every financial institution will use quantum computers, maybe over the cloud, maybe with some other deployments, but they will have them deeply integrated in their workloads for those challenges that I mentioned. So to be clear, you will keep running Excel using your normal computer. You will keep having, you know, web servers and all that using the same things that we use today. But when it comes to simulations, combinatorial problems, or even machine learning problems, all those types of workloads will be running on quantum computers, and we will have massive improvements on how we manage our economies, for example.
Well, it's been such a great discussion so far and so illustrative of the potential of quantum. And thank you for that prediction. I will schedule a podcast for 10 years from now so we can go back and fact check how your predictions were.
Absolutely.
So we started out talking about why you and your team at Moody's Analytics endeavored with this project in the first place. And now that it's done, and you know, I'm sure you're as excited as we are to share this research with the world, but what is Moody's Analytics' immediate plan of action as a result of these findings?
So we have been working on this for a little bit over a year. And our main goal with this report was to tell the world how much work is still needed in creating awareness. The quantum computer industry is still tiny if you compare it with the artificial intelligence industry. And we're talking in the age of ChatGPT, right? So
yeah.
There are technologies that are changing the world today. Quantum computing is going to change the world tomorrow. Or after tomorrow. So one of our first orders of business is share this report with the world to say, hey, look at all this work that we need to do still in terms of building this awareness, building this training, reskilling or upskilling our workforce, so we are prepared to face this type of technology. The rest of our plans are still the same. We are still doing our own research on how to apply quantum algorithms in the industry. Some of that research, we're doing it with universities that we partner with. Some other research, we're partnering with our own clients, with their own quantum computing teams. So we make sure we don't reinvent the wheel. So one of the things that we have created is the Quantum for Finance Alliance, which is basically a consumer, a client or demand side only alliance or community of people in the financial industry leveraging quantum computing in a very low IP intellectual property sharing way, but in a way that we share best practices, that we don't, again, reinvent the wheel, and that we can help each other on driving this industry. And then finally, the third thing is precisely on the training and reskilling and education. We are about release a set of courses in our Moody's Banking Learning Solutions that we are partnering with Coreca, a company in quantum education. And this course is going to be available for all our clients very, very soon, in probably a couple of months. And we're very, very happy about that.
Oh, excellent. Well, Sergio, thank you so much for your time. I can't believe how quickly these 30 minutes went. But it was wonderful to talk to you. And it was a real privilege to work with you and your team on this project. And we're really excited to share it with you, with the world, and let them all in on what we all found out.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me here, and looking forward for the next one.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed the episode. Be sure to subscribe to the Business of Data podcast wherever you're currently listening, and keep up with us on socials. And for more content, visit us on businessofdata.com. Be well, and thank you for listening.